Hello and welcome. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, you've read the headlines on biznews.com, watched the interviews on BizNews TV, and caught up on the BizNews briefing. And of course, also listened and watched, I hope, our BizNews Daybreak, which we have ready for you by 6 a.m. at the latest, every morning. But now let's talk about what the latest developments mean for your money. This is the Editor's Desk, exclusive analysis for BizNews Premium members. Today is Monday, the 8th of December, 2025, and I'm really glad to have you with me. For the first time in 19 years, I won't be attending the World Economic Forum in Davos next year. Now, this is an interesting issue and one that I know members of the tribe have been pretty grumpy about at times, saying, why are you going there to get the globalists' agenda and then sharing that with us? And I have said many times before, I go there to learn, I go there to see, and I go there to get exposed to people like Alex Karp, thankfully, the Palantir CEO, who after meeting him, I thought, phew, this guy's special. And we then put Palantir into our portfolio and at $8.50, and it's now $180. And that's only a couple of years. So if that was the only thing that I got back from the WEF, or the World Economic Forum, as most people know it, then that's a good thing. But let me take you into the most recent development. And I was happily getting ready to have my 20th visit, and I didn't receive an invitation at the usual time. So not just not a participant's invitation, but no media invitation either, which is really strange, because you could go from that orange badge to even go down to one more level. It's like you're on the white level, then there's an orange level, then there's a purple level. So I thought at worst I would be at least invited as reporting press. Whether or not I would have gone is a moot point, because we now have this new commitment to ENCA. And unless I could have made some kind of particular arrangement there, it was unlikely that I would be able to abandon my post, as it were, during that week. But I started thinking about it over the weekend, and I thought, but this is bizarre, because I got hold of the chap that I dealt with, Trevor Cho, who I had a fantastic meal with before we left. So everything was good, and see you next year. And he responded to my email. I said, I haven't received an invitation. He responded to my email to say, no, we're restricting invitations or something. And basically you didn't make the cut, which is fine. It's their right. But I thought it was strange. And then I remembered last year I went to an event with Brand South Africa, and it was a shocker. There were 200 people in this incredibly expensive venue at what they call the Golden Eye, the Holiday Inn. Cyril was there, but it was all hosted by Brand South Africa, and they had some new CEO who was half flirting, half obsequious kind of praise for Cyril. And I looked around me, and it was pretty much just South Africans. There were very, very few international people there. And this was a huge change from the past, where Brand South Africa used to use the Davos event. It was much smaller, the dinner that they hosted, maybe 40 people. And at that dinner, we were all asked to bring, us as South Africans, we were asked to bring members from the international community who could do good for our country. And I remember the one year I brought the head of Nomura Bank in the UK, and that it was that caliber of person. And it was always a very good engagement and interaction that you had there. This one was a shocker. With the exception of meeting Kirsty Coventry, who didn't stay, by the way. She's now the head of the IOC. She was the Zimbabwean Minister of Sport. She was at the same table. And, of course, when I reported back to the tribe about what had happened there, I said, sheepers, this Brand South Africa, what a waste of money. and they need to reassess and go back to the past. Well, that's about the only thing I can work out on why I would have gone from being, well, I suppose one of the first people on the South African list, or was there something else? Well, Klaus Schwab was edged out. He was the founder of the World Economic Forum, and he was edged out of his own creation. And I know that there has been quite a bit of negative feedback to the powers that be at the WEF over the years, especially during the Zuma era, where they sure as hell didn't want me around. And I know that they made no secret of that. But there was no withdrawal of my credentials. But now that Klaus is gone, I think that the WEF has become very different. I did talk to him about it a few weeks ago, about how he feels about having left there. And it was an off-the-record conversation, so let's just leave it. Suffice to say that it's not the organization anymore of what it was that he created. The only thing I can make of all of this was that someone at Rand South Africa was really angry at what I'd written and the criticism, and that as a consequence, they must have complained to the new WEF people, and the new WEF people said, drop this guy. You know, we don't need troublemakers here. Now, that's fine. I mean, and please don't misinterpret any of this. I've had my run, and it's phenomenal, and I've enjoyed the place enormously. It has been a gathering place of some incredible intellectuals and wonderful minds, and I can't tell you how much benefit I've derived as a financial journalist from it. And so it's probably time, more than time, for the next group of financial journalists to go in there and to be exposed to this as well. But it does bother me that it appears to me as though the whole idea of the WEF, of being this independent organization where you had the truth coming out, even though often they invited, I remember there was one guy called Jennings who was a trade unionist who used to sling off against the WEF all the time, but he was always back there, and there were others as well, other journalists who were very critical of it. And that was the way that Klaus Schwab used to run it, was that he used to bring everybody into the tent, as it were. But now this new bunch, I don't know. Anyway, that's my story. And it was something that is going to make me think a little differently now about the World Economic Forum into the future. And I'm sure there are many members of the tribe who are celebrating this because, boy, have I defended this organization in our own grouping many, many times in the past. And I've tackled people and said, but you don't really know what it is, what goes on there, that it is an organization where there's a huge amount of learning to be had. I mean, where else would I have bumped into Nuru Rabini or even Muhammad Yunus, the new driver behind what's happening? And that was last year. Well, I did interview him some years before. In Bangladesh, he's bringing democracy to Bangladesh, helping the youngsters who stood in the streets and were shot by the regime's forces. And as the kids fell, a new one took their place. And many of them were murdered in that way. And Muhammad Yunus told us the story and told the story to the world. Anyway, it is what it is. It does tell you, though, that there's something going on and something behind the scenes that is really sad when one of the independent organizations or an organization that holds itself out to be independent can be influenced in this way through filthy lucre. Okay, well, on to the investment insights for today. Also getting influenced by filthy lucre are the poor BEE shareholders in MTN Zakhele Futhi. The shares jumped from 16 cents to 25 cents on Friday, but it's down 97% year to date. And because of the travails that MTN have had in recent years, the BEE shareholders in Zakhele Futhi have basically done their boots. The share price was over 30 rand 4 years ago. And it was supposed to be a repeat of the first MTN Zakhele, which was a geared BEE play that worked out very, very well for shareholders there. But I suppose that's of cold comfort if you happen to be just involved in the second one. But it does show you just the danger of gearing when you're buying shares. It's all very well when things are going in the right direction. But in this case, it went in the other direction. And as a consequence of that, well, the shareholders lost basically everything. I got a note from Stafford Marcy on Friday to say he's got some really big news on Monday. Stafford is one of the best, probably a guru about the internet here in South Africa. And he's the chairman of what used to be called Altvest and is now the Africa Bitcoin Corporation. That's the company that was started by Warren Wheatley, who was very close to Tsepo Malelwe, who's a shareholder in BizNews. And that's the reason why Warren, I think, was initially Tsepo's financial advisor. And then he became, he's a chartered accountant, and he became very involved in Arena when Tsepo bought Arena. And when Arena, or when Tsepo bought a small share in BizNews, that's how we got to know each other. Anyway, Warren is going great guns with what's now called Africa Bitcoin Corporation, and sent me some pictures of himself and Stafford meeting Dr. Saifedean Ammous. Now, members of the tribe will remember that he's the guy who wrote The Bitcoin Standard, and he's now written a new book called The Gold Standard, which could be quite fun. But what is more important in all of this is that Dr. Saifedean Ammous has been prevailed upon to join the ABC, the Africa Bitcoin Corporation, as an advisor. So staff is really excited about it. I've no doubt that the shareholders in ABC will be too. We are a shareholder. BizNews is a shareholder. We did work for them and were paid in shares many years ago. Anyway, we still hold them. That's not a strategic holding, but we do. We have some shares in this company. So just for clarification. But what I do find interesting is that Ammous is kind of the Bitcoin guru of gurus. And he's now a strategic advisor for this South African company, which can only be good if you are a Bitcoin maximalist, as Stafford Marcy is. And I see it's interesting to notice that Stafford is now the executive chairman. In other words, that's his full-time job. So these guys, Stafford and Warren, are really going great guns. They are regular visitors to the BizNews conference. So if you come along to the one in March, Stafford's not going to be speaking in March. We've reduced the investment grouping somewhat, and it's the first half day, but he and Warren are almost certain to be there. And after the investment conference, they actually had a Bitcoin event on the Friday after the BizNews conference, in the investment conference. So I'm sure we'll see them there. And just to close off with some interesting information today. I know I'm going on a bit today, but some interesting stuff from EPSA. It was a trading update from them, and that closes out all four of the major big four banks with their trading updates. Remember, with the exception of First Rand, the other three, Standard Bank, Nedbank, and EPSA, have year ends in December. First Rand's year end is in June, but they reported to the 6 months to December. Now it's a closed period until they start reporting their results in March. So they've given this update, this trading update, and once again, there were very good signals there from EPSA that we are heading for better days in South Africa. I will be talking to Kokkie Kooyman about the trading updates tomorrow afternoon. And this afternoon, I'll be talking to Angela Schwartz, the chief executive of SPAR. And SPAR brought its year-end results out today. The headline number is awful, 4.8 billion rand loss. And they've thrown the kitchen sink at it, at the whole business. Angelo is a new CEO, and that often happens with CEOs, new appointees, that they want to just clear the decks and then they can focus and on their own issues. And it was interesting. There was a similar story that we saw with Nedbank, who's also got a new CEO, where Nedbank settled this long-running feud or legal issue that it had with Transnet. Paid $600 million to settle it. But it was one of those that was likely to go on for many, many years and cost all kinds of fees for the shareholders. The CEO, Quinn, said that he felt that, he didn't say anything, but you can imagine that in the board probably felt that we needed to just get rid of this, get it off the books, even though they did not accept any liability. It's something from the state capture era. But now SPAR, and I'm going to be very interested to find out from Angelo whether this is part of his clearing of the decks, because they certainly have thrown the kitchen sink at the bad news, or on the bad news. And of course, the share prices reacted as well. There is a bright spot, though, and that's Ireland. They dropped the operations in Poland and Switzerland, which were really bleeding. But in Ireland, things are going well. And here in South Africa, it does appear to be at least stable, but the board has passed the final dividend to conserve cash. So the message is pretty clear. The international distraction is over. The focus is now back on home soil. It's a painful reset, but a necessary one. I'm going to leave it there for today, and I'm sure you're saying, thank heavens. Keep an eye on your premium newsletter for links to our freshest published content. Thanks for trusting us with your time. I'm Alec Hogg. Until tomorrow, cheerio.